Senior Focus.
Welcome everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Khoury. I'm your presenter for Senior Focus for this session. And today we're talking about reflections on COVID-19, on communities and the local board plans, and what advocacy seniors, senior leaders are talking about in that space, and also about the future of Senior Focus, our radio show. So I'm going to start with that point. This year we're heading towards celebrating our fifth birthday in November. And when I look back, I started 5 years ago not having any experience on radio at all, and I've learned quite a lot in the interim. But it's been an exciting journey, and it's been one that we've had some professional broadcasters assisting us with. We've had Richard Barter in. We've had also other members of the senior community doing programs from time to time. And last week, we were very delighted to receive over $500 in donations. That excited a lot of us because it's given us the sense that we can pay our broadcasting fees that are outstanding, and that we can get ourselves onto a footing where we can set up a trust for keeping things going long term. So we began with the financial backing of Auckland Grey Power, and I was of course the president in those days, and we received that regular payment towards the broadcasting fees. We didn't get paid ourselves, we were all volunteers, but the getting the broadcasting fees paid actually made a big difference. So for the last year, we've actually been limping along with a trickle of donations coming in, and so now we've actually had a substantial amount. It means we can at least pay our way to December. We're having another event, another film event, and it'll be a very good opportunity for people who are listeners to come out and meet other listeners, to enjoy each other's company, and also to hear from people who are involved behind the scenes with keeping the station on air. So it was very good to have Joe Holstead addressing us at the last film evening, and we also had Emily Preston along. And Emily is a very interesting person because she has been involved in the Generations Project, which has been looking at seniors' needs, social isolation, difficulties around loneliness, and how people can be better connected in neighbourhoods, and in what ways we can actually get help to people who are isolated. And of course COVID has highlighted some of this for us, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But Emily's concerns and interests at the moment is to hear from people about their experience of being connected across generations during COVID. So some people found that younger people were helping them with shopping, helping them with digital stuff, sending text messages for them, finding out where they could get more support, linking them to organisations. There were lots of ways in which young people were involved during COVID-19 lockdown period, assisting older people. And so Emily's very keen to hear from people who have experiences of intergenerational support and connectivity. So her email is emily.preston@innovationunit.org. So I'll repeat that. So Emily's email is Emily, that's Emily.preston, Preston, at innovation, INNOVATION, unit.org. And you could also call her on 021-049-6093. So So I'll repeat that number too. Her cell phone is 021-049-6093. She's quite keen if you want to write to her as well. She's very interested to know how old you are, where you live, what your ethnicity is, and your name, and any experience that you've had during the lockdown. So her PO box is 47810 Ponsonby, and that's Auckland 1144. And she wants to hear from you by the 15th of August. So her PO box again is 47810 Ponsonby, Auckland 1144. So that's Emily Preston and her work on generational connectivity. And, of course, recommendations could come out of this sharing to government. And in the past, the Generations Unit has produced material which has gone to the Minister of Social Development, Carmel Cipollone, and it has been shared in public meetings, not by people's names necessarily, but their experiences have been collated and put into a report. So do get in touch, do make efforts to tell Emily about your experiences, because it will make a difference. Now, talking about the reflections on COVID-19, a report came out yesterday from Inspiring Communities. And this is a group throughout the country that looks positively at what the learnings are from the experience, what has changed, if anything. What are the indicators of what worked? What were the lessons learned? And so on. And the key findings at the start of the report that were no surprise to me, because there were things that have been shared in other meetings that I've been at community level. But the key findings were learnings from lockdown and the way that people came together and supported each other. There was a definite response from the communities up and down the country, from neighbourhoods, from street level to community groups and so on. There were new ways of working, new relationships, new policies and practices came into view, and these can all be reinforced and utilised. These can all be built on, and these can give us a platform for a strong future to cope with future disasters, future emergencies, and indeed more pandemics, because the scientists do say that we are likely to have a pandemic every 10 years, and global warming through climate change is impacting on the viruses, on the mutation rates and the frequency with which they are cropping up. So this is all preparation, I guess, for long-term futures that we need to be concerned about. At the national level, what we did benefit from was leadership from the top, having clear, direct messaging, the message to be kind, and caring, the team of 5 million. I think these were positive injections, if you like, that really helped to wield people into action and cement people into connecting more. And so this is what is the finding of the report. There was a strong sense of shared purpose, because shared values were activated. So values like solidarity, like coming together, being generous, being kind, being caring, being family-based, all these values were touched on in the messaging and were utilised strongly by groups that were doing the mahi and the work on the ground. People were empowered to work differently, to do whatever it took, to act quickly, to pivot, to improve processes. So things that had been going along for many years in a particular groove suddenly got changed, and changed for the better. Now, on the East Coast, where Ngāti Porou people are the majority of the ethnicities, and they actually took charge of their area in terms of their own workforce. They renegotiated all their health contracts. And I have mentioned this in a previous program at least once. But the impact was huge. I mean, for starters, people were travelling long distances on the highway to get to distant towns to buy their supplies. So that all changed. They brought the supplies to the people. And instead of hundreds of cars going up and down the highway, the fuel bills were cut. So the families had more money in their pockets and more money for food and didn't have to worry about the long car journeys. But it was much safer. There were no accidents to speak of, no road deaths. There were many, many changes that came about simply through this redistribution of food and supplies. And this is going to go on. It's not, people aren't going to go back to business as usual, especially when it was very expensive and costly and time-consuming, and there were high injury rates involved. So that's just one area of change. But up and down New Zealand, there were communities discovering that they could take charge, do things differently, make savings, make things safer, and people could benefit, save time, energy, frustration, etc. At the neighbourhood level, there were a lot of safety checks put in place. There were a lot of support systems, hygiene packs, food parcels, grocery shopping, shelter, warmth, firewood, clothes, all kinds of things came into existence that normally wouldn't have been thought of, but as we went into winter, all very valuable. But what stood out was the information sharing, data collection, because people became very data-focused, obviously, wanting to know how many people were being tested and where were they being tested and so forth. So these changes about the data collection have really brought agencies together. They've brought about greater sharing and collaboration in agencies. They've made people more focused on outcomes. And this all augurs well for planning for the future, whether it's planning at the DHB level, whether it's planning at the council level, or whether it's projects driven by central government. All of this planning is going to be done somewhat differently in future, and there will be more transparency and more sharing going on. I think also that Māori leadership has been very prominent in a lot of what's taken place in rural communities, particularly the North Island. And so this is going to be a change too, because it's going to mean there will be more iwi involvement, there will be more Māori leadership, there will be more Māori-led activity, more community-led activity. And this is all going to be very positive for the future. It's going to mean more engagement with people on the ground. There was no time for personality clashes or patch protection or ego-driven conflicts. Previous differences were put to one side. So many people also noted a greater appreciation of other people, because they were seeing people in their home situations via Zoom meetings. This actually put people, this whole Zoom process, actually put people onto a level playing field. It's a subtle thing, but whether you were a lead person in an agency, whether you're a worker, whether you were reporting in from the neighbourhood, you were all equal. All had the same size square on the screen. You all had the same amount of time to speak, roughly speaking, unless, of course, you had a particular presentation role. So all of this actually brought about a greater sense of shared commitment, greater collaboration, and as it happened over time, I think it built trust, and as I say, barriers came down. Now, I saw this happen myself on some of the community Zoom meetings that I was on, so I can actually testify that this report is actually reflecting a great deal of what happened. It's certainly true for my experience anyway. People actually valued their work roles. They valued what they were hearing from other people. They developed an appreciation and understanding of what other people's roles were. So this all added great value to the speed with which responses were made. And this was, you know, very fast. The responses were really immediate and very heartwarming. And people were very grateful for the speed at which things were done. Many barriers that exist or have existed in past delivery of services fell away. But I also think that all of this worked because people put in extra hours, and often part-timers worked full-time. Full-timers stretch from 60 to 80-hour weeks. And we've had people on the program recently who've commented on this, and one of the people who presented about opening little boxes, that wonderful book about lockdown, was a doctor who was working in a medical setting in the Whangarei Hospital. And he mentioned the very long hours. And I've come across this in other contexts as well. So obviously some of what was achieved during COVID-19 lockdown would not be achievable as the norm on an ongoing basis, because obviously people aren't going to be able to work with that intensity and commit themselves that way. There's also been talk about changes in the workplace, because people working from home found it, they got a lot more work done, and they found it actually worked very well for them, and they're delighted in the fact that they weren't spending so much time in the traffic in Auckland in particular. So, yes, there were advantages in some of the changes, but also what you can do for 4 to 6 to 8 weeks is not what you are going to do as your normal working life over the span of a year or so. So some people worked possibly too long and too hard in their home environment because they didn't have a proper cut-off point, or they didn't have those natural intersections like talking at the photocopier or down the corridor on the way to a meeting. I think also it was the fact that it was an emergency and people were pulling together. There was that strong emphasis to make sure things worked, to make sure things got done. Whereas back when it's just business as usual, I don't think people are going to extend themselves that far. In fact, it would be important they didn't, for their own health. There's a new shared understanding, though, across the country, and how well we can look after the vulnerable aspects to do with safety and well-being of us all. And this is one of the outcomes of the pandemic, that we could actually see what we were capable of, that we could understand more what the needs were, and that we could respond. And I think that even with travel, more people walked and cycled and explored their neighbourhood. More people had a stronger sense of place about the area they live in and valued it more, fell in love with their place. So there were many positive outcomes in terms of building connections within communities, building placemaking, valuing one's connection to place. The extent to which nature recovered during COVID-19 lockdown, the extent to which many animals and birds return to their habitats, whether it was whales in Italy or whether it was birds in our back garden. This was quite surprising to a lot of people, and I think pleasantly supporting people thinking more about, well, how can we look after nature better in future? I mean, do we have to go back to some of the downside of the way we live? Can we really do a better job for nature? So there are questions there still to be answered and still to be worked through. But it has been a really great opportunity for people to reflect and to consider what they might like to do in the future and how they might want to live, what their values are and what counts most. So the general consensus from what I've heard is very much around it was great to simplify things. It was great not to be rushing. It was great to be able to take time to be with family, to share, to listen, to read, to engage, instead of having the mind going in six directions at once, thinking about what else you needed to do or hadn't done. The fact that people really enjoyed so much of the lockdown, despite the inconveniences, really rang home and rang true to a lot of people, because it was almost like turning the clock back. It was almost like going back to the 60s when you could walk down the road without cars threatening your existence, when you could talk to your neighbours and expected them to greet you on the street and so on. These are some of the things that I can remember quite vividly as part of my life 40 years ago. It's really fascinating for people to be discovering this, for who it's new and they didn't grow up with it. So I guess it's going to really mean that people have more choice about how they do things, and they're going to be more selective, and they're going to be more caring and invest more in themselves and in their families. And that's got to be good for the country as a whole. It's time for a music break, and I've selected a track, Blue Haze, just because I like to have some jazz, and it's a great way to just kick back, chill out. And when we return, I will be talking about local boards and communities and that submission process that's rapidly coming up. The deadline is the 13th of August. It's not far away. So enjoy your music. Thank you. Welcome back, folks. And it's just a brief conversation now about the local board plans. This is a three-year plan that they're putting in, and they've done some consultation already, and lockdown has kind of thrown it out a little bit in two ways. One, the timing, but two, it's more the budget, because the council is heavily affected by things like Auckland Transport's buses not running and not collecting fares, and, you know, there are many, many holes in the budget, so many millions down, and there are big questions as to what the local board plans can actually cater for and how much. Probably a 10% drop in projects across the board is fairly much to be expected, but it could be more. The thing is that this is your chance to get your views across to your local board about what matters to you in the transport space and the community space, in whether there's adequate footpaths, seating, lighting for safety purposes. You know, these are just some of the kinds of things that I think are very important to seniors. So how do you do this? The best way is to go to your local library and ask the librarian. If there are no copies of the plan available, they can download something off the internet for you. They can also download a form or give you a form, or they can help you fill out a form online. So first port of call is your library, and your deadline is 4 p.m. on the 13th of August. Also, it's a good idea if you belong to any groups or clubs to get in touch with them to see whether they want to do anything about putting a submission in, because how sports fields are treated, how parks are developed and so on is all part of the planning process. So please get involved, and I will also talk about it on the next program and give a reminder. But it's something that impacts on everyone, but it's also particularly tough on seniors who have mobility issues, access issues, low vision, aren't too steady on their feet. There's all these kinds of issues need to be thought of and mentioned to remind local boards that you're out there and you're increasingly a larger group in the population. So thank you for listening, and I wish you well for the next week, and I hope you get a chance to have a look at those plans for your area. Thank you. Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/SeniorFocus. And do note, Senior Focus is